Okay. Shows to watch a cuddle. Are you grateful for inviting me down here? It's kind of nice to get out of cold Jersey. We hit a topic where Hashem, we coincide with Daf Yomi. Mora tells us in Daf Tes and in Tainis Aser, Ta'aser, Aser B'shul Shet is Aser. Yechon found his nephew learning this pasuk, and the nephew asked him, "What is this Aser B'shul Shet is Aser?" So he said, "Try it out and you'll see. Give Meiser and you'll see the Rebbeinu Shalom will give it back to you." So the child said, "Are you allowed to test Hashem?" No, it's also an Aser, so you're not allowed to test Hashem. He says, "No, Meiser is different. Test me out, and you'll see I will pour bracha upon you." So this is Gepaskin by Chavos Chaim or Hashulchan Aruch LeMaisa, that when it comes to Inyan Yitzdaka, specifically when it comes to Maisa Ksofim, you're allowed to test the Rebbeinu Shalom, give the money, and say, "Rebbeinu Shalom, I want to see this back." And you will see it back with interest. So Taisus over there points out, page 8 in the booklet, Achizav is a free. The Zafri says, "Aser to Aser, kol tvua zarecha. Give Meisim all the tvua that you put out in the field, shana shana, in the tvua zarecha." Now, normally we are familiar with the concept of Meisim when it comes to produce, but how do you know that Shafag be Meisim is a pragmatic kol shara rochim minayin? All other profits, all their income, how do you know it's given Meisim? Tamalem es kol. As kol is coming to tell you, that you have to be also give Meisim of all other income besides for your produce. So this seems to be an open, clear pasuk that there's a chiyuv of ma'aser k'safim when someone makes money, whether it's from ribbis, whether it's pragmatic, whether it's from business, he has to give ma'aser. To the extent of chanunin abozais, give it, and the Rebbeinu Shalom says, "Test me out, and you'll get it back." So there's a beautiful Rav Shimon Shkop in his introduction to Shari Yesher. And he says, why is it that when it comes to Meisr specifically, you could say the Rebbeinu Shalom, "I'm giving this and I expect to see it back"? What about if you did other averus? What if you're not a big tzaddik? And he says, on the flip side, even if you are a big tzaddik, you're not allowed to test the Rebbeinu Shalom, say, "Rebbeinu Shalom, I'm putting on tefillin and I expect to see results." So why is it specifically when it comes to money and Meisr, here we say, we tell the Rebbeinu Shalom, "I'm giving this, I expect to see it back." So it's a beautiful marach he has over there, that the whole way we view the perspective of a person as part of a Klal Yisrael. He says the goal of each person is to be Marktiv Izani. Every person is intended by nature to love themselves, and you're supposed to include in yourself more and more and more people until you see yourself as just a prat, just one little part in a greater picture in a whole big society. So he explains that the bracha that Hashem gives to the world, specifically to Klal Yisrael, is never to an individual. It's given to the Klal. And there's certain amounts you have to get to certain people. It doesn't all come to the person it's intended for. The Rebbeinu Shalom will sometimes give it to someone to disperse for him. If we're given extra assets, it's not intended for you, it's intended for others. So he says, imagine someone who's in charge of the treasury. Not nowadays, in the olden days when they took responsibility for the treasury. So if they were honest and trustworthy as far as the money is concerned, and the money is being dispersed the way it should be, so then they'll be entrusted with more. Whereas, if the money's not being given out because the person's too cheap, or because being too careful, or for any number of good, potentially good reasons for other things, but the money's not ending up where it's supposed to go, then he's going to lose his job. So he says, Shimon says the same thing with Meiser, with Hashem's bracha into the world. You're given extra, it's intended for other people. If you do what you're supposed to do, you give it to the intended recipients, then the Rebbeinu will give you more. You're doing a great job. You do have other averus, he'll settle his accounts in other places. But you can even be a big tzaddik, but if the money's not going where it's supposed to, because you have too many cheshbonos, you're being too careful with your stock, and you might say, you're saying, this one doesn't deserve it, and that place doesn't deserve it, and you're not doing the chiyuv you're supposed to do, then the Rebbeinu is going to take it away. I have to find someone else to give the intended recipient the money that they're supposed to get. So, we had a Taisis. Taisis is essentially telling us that there's a chiyuv, Meiser K'safim, he's coming from a Sufri. We don't actually have this Sufri, but it is a Yalkut, slightly worded a little differently, that there's a chiyuv, Meiser K'safim. Comes along the Bach, it's a Mishin Lamed Alf, Yeridea, and he says, Meiser K'safim, it's not the Raisa, it's not the Rabbanan, it's a minik, it's a nice thing to do. So the Taz jumps on it, says, my father-in-law, you made a big mistake on this one, he totally missed it. He says, of course, it's an absolute chiyuv. Where is he coming from? This is in page 11 of the booklet. It says, Marachami, my father-in-law, the Bach, Kosov, Shalom, 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 it's not an obligation to raise or to Rabbanu, to Mehati. Look at Reshim and Reshim test, which is the beginning of the Chesed. All the Paiskim say it's a Chiyuv Gomer. He says he even quotes it from Yerushalmi, yes, which is similar to the Yalka that we just, to the places that similar to the Sufri and the Yalka that they quoted, not quite the same. So the Taz says the Bach just like somehow forgot a whole Simon. There's a whole Simon Shulchan Aruch Yerushalmi test, and the Bach just like forgot about it. So that's a pretty strong accusation that he kind of forgot a whole Simon. He actually wrote on that Simon as well. So how can the Bach have missed all the Paiskim? So if we look there, Rishon Tess, the beginning of it is on page 16. The Mechava there says, how much tzedakah do you have to give? And how should you give it? So the Mechava starts off, he's quoting a Rambam and Hilchot Tzedakah. The Shir Nesin also, the Shir of giving Meiser, and the other Vaseges, if you can afford it, is on the top of 16, hold it on top. Hold it at the top of the page. The Shir Nesin and the other Vaseges, is Yitek Yitzarech Aniyim. If you can afford it, you give whatever the Ani needs. You see an Ani, he needs money, you give him whatever he needs. If you ain't got the Messiah, it's called Kaf. You can't afford to give so much. Yitek Nat Chaymish Nechasim. It's an Amukhur. The best is to give up to a Chaymish. Bechem Yasar is me the Beninus, a tenth. That's the average. That's typically expected from a person. Pops me Kinayin Roh. Less than that, that's already a stingy person. And then the Rambam continues, again quoting the Rishalmi, Chaymish Yasharu is the first year you give up the Karen, whatever you get in income. The chemish, if you can, or the meiser comes off the top, and then every year we come to Eloch, you give a chemish erivich mikol shana. So this is the mechaber that the Taz is sending us to. All the place can agree with this halacha. It's a Rambam. So he's saying half of the Bach had forgotten enough in halacha. So clearly, though, the Bach didn't understand this halacha to have anything to do with meiser ksav. He said this is staka. It's not Meiser Ksachim. Meiser is this new thing of a minik to give Meiser. It's not the Chivat Tzedakah. Chivat Tzedakah is you see an Ani, you have to support it. So there we have Shiurim. You have to buy an Esrei Gam, you have to pay for an Esrei Gam. You have to give it to your local shul. You have to give it when there's a cause, how much you have to give. But this has nothing to do with Meiser. The Ramah on this halacha of the Mechaber, at the end of the page, but it's continued on page 30, I believe. Ramah has continued on the same halacha. Ramah says, and by the way, the ein laza is be meiser shaloi dvar mitzvah. You shouldn't do with your meiser. You shouldn't do divrei mitzvah. You ain't neir so beis haknesses or shad dvar mitzvah or any other mitzvahs. Rakita laniyim. Your meiser should not be used for other mitzvahs, like to give to the shul to run the electricity. Rather, it should be given to aniyim. So the Ramah all of a sudden discovered this mitzvah of Meiser, and this is the entire reference to Meiser Ksafim in Shulchan Aruch. There's no other references to Meiser Ksafim in Shulchan Aruch. There's no other Mechaber, there's no other. This Ramah is the whole thing. So the Ramah is coming off the Mechaber, takes for granted that Mechaber does mean that you're going to give Meiser, and says, by the way, what should you do with your Meiser? You should give it to Aniyim. So we clearly see a very important Machlekes that runs through all of the Chastak and Meiser, and that is this. The Taz and the Ramah clearly assume that Meiser Ksachim is related to Tzedakah. You have to give Tzedakah. How much Tzedakah should you give? Meiser. And that's the expected of the average person to give Meiser. And therefore, the Taz says, all the Paiskim agree that there's a Chiyuv of Meiser. The Bach and the Piskei Tshuva quotes is already found in the Rishonim that this minig of Meiser Ksachim is not a mitzvah of Tzedakah. It's an old minig. How old is it? It goes back to Yaakov Avinu. Whatever you give me, aset hasrenu, and it's been carried. It was done throughout the ages, from Yaakov Avinu till today. Every Jew always gave mice, and if he could, even by Yaakov Avinu establishing that he's going to give mice, it's Meduki gave twice mice. You know, there's chaimish is also part of this process, but it's different than the mitzvah of stock. Mitzvah of stock is a regular mitzvah chiyuvus. Mitzvah of mice is a minik, separate from the mitzvah of tzedakah, and that is it's a minik, but it's not the rice, not the rabbanon. It's an old Jewish minik that everyone does. So now, what is the chiluk? What is the chiluk between tzedakah and meiser? They sound very much the same, especially the Ramah setting it up. It's earmarked for aniyim. So what's the chiluk between the two? Why is that so critical? Because once we have the Piskei Tshuva quoting from the Rishayim, from Maram, that this chiv of Meiser is not the Raisa, it's just a minig. So that's the consensus of the Paiskim. The consensus of the Paiskim is that Meiser is not a real chiv. It's a minig. So what is the difference between Staka and Meiser? So the difference is very, very fundamental and not really complicated. Staka is like most mitzvahs b'adam machaveri, is that it's reactive. When you see a situation, when you see a need, you should respond to it as best as you can, as much as you're able. You see somebody's donkey collapsing, help him unload his donkey. You see someone in pain, help him out. You don't have to go running around looking for people's tires to change. If you get a call and someone needs a tire change, so you go help them out. There's no mitzvah to every day look through your phone book and see who may have a flat tire today. It's only when you're passing by, you see the guy on the side of the road, or you're a chaver member, you do this for a living, fine. That's your mitzvah. But you don't have to look for it. Whereas meiser is the opposite. It's proactive. Hashem gave you bracha, shave something off. It's not all for you. Like, who's that for Rav Shimon? I'm just a gizber. I do what I'm supposed to do. I take what I need for myself. 80% is usually needed to reinvest. 20% is usually profit. That's we see from Yosef HaTzadik, Chofetz Chaim brings that. So of that 20%, 10 for me, 10 for the Ben Shalom. I'm going to give up the chaymish. That's really, if you could afford it, you could live on the 80, then adarab, give chaymish is even better. But it's a double meiser. 10 for the Ben Shalom, I have more, another 10 for the Ben Shalom. But that's how we view meiser. Things aren't just given for me, I'm going to find recipients to give it to. Who do I give it to? So that we're going to have to discuss who is worthy of receiving meiser. But that fundamental difference remains. Stalka is right now, there's a cause, there's a need, you react as best as you can. Meiser is proactive. I was given bracha, I'm going to take something off, I'm going to give it to the Rebbe Shlomo. So now, if we're going to establish that meiser is a minig, not a chiv, so it's sort of a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it's great news, it's not a chiv. So it's always good to, Einam Suv Meiser is because you don't have that oil, that obligation. So it's gishmak, it's not a chiv. On the other hand, all the place can point out that once you start giving it, it's a nether. A nether is more chomer than that, the drabbanon, the potential drabbanon of meiser. A nether is their eisen. If you accepted to do this and didn't sably nether, you're in big trouble. So one caveat that we have is that when you started doing it, you thought you were mechuyev to do it, and you just discovered today that it's not a chiyuv, then it didn't become a nether yet, because it was betal. So you thought you were mechuyev. Now you just discovered it's not a chiyuv. So therefore, all today, if we just discovered this today, that it's not a chiyuv, we're going to say that going forward, when we give meiser, which we have to do, because it's a minute keduma, it goes back to Yaakov Avinu, it's expected of every Jew. But we're going to say clearly, we're doing it b'li nether. And we're going to do it b'li nether, we're going to do it in a way that we can rely on all the clues we find in the place when necessary. Because there's a lot of complicated stuff, there's many things that aren't exactly clear. Our whole economy is structured in a way that makes things very, very convoluted of when something is a profit, when isn't. Last example, maybe we'll get to is a refi. What is a refi? Is it a loan? Is it a profit? What is it? We took this loan and turned it into a profit. It's kind of a weird thing. So we're going to have to, when we accept to give meiser, or chaymish if we can, we're going to accept that we're doing a b'li nether, and we're going to allow ourselves the leniency to rely on paiskim as necessary. When we need for clarification, we're going to rely on the kul de geshitas.
That means that we're passing it's not a key to the bottom, it's a
absolutely. That is the consensus of Chaim, Rav Shulchan, Rav Moshe, and many, many other places. So now, if we are going to take this track, that Meiser is not tzedakah, it's a nuchiv that you're giving Rebach and you're supposed to shave something off and give it out. So what kind of chiv is it? So it seems clear, we didn't forget about Tosis. Tosis is coming from a pasuk, we didn't call it an asmachta or a remez, like the Lashon of the Yalkut, it's just a remez from pragmatic to give Meiser. But their remez is based on aser ta'aser, it's called tzvuah zarach. It's going to be done to tzvuah. Just like when you plant produce and it grows, you take off 10% of whatever grows. So too, all of your income, you're going to take off 10%. So now all the Yachrim have a very basic problem. When you plant tefuah, so we don't really care what expenses went into planting the tefuah. Whatever grows is telo, is a chiv de shemayim, misa de shemayim, if you don't take off maizus, tumas and maizus. And even if you're taking a loss on it, that's too bad. This is telo, this is what grew. You have to take off meiser. So now, does that mean that your expenditures into your business are not deducted from your Ma'aser Cheshbon. Meaning, when we balance the books, we have to say anything that came in, regardless of the expenses that went into producing that money, everything that came in is like Teva, and you have to take off Ma'aser. They just say it can't be. The Shulz Yaakov, like he goes on and on about it. He said people spend fortunes of money to make a small profit. Because again, even a small margin, if it's you're investing enough, it's worth it. But if you're going to tell me I can't deduct the expenses, there'll be nothing left. Just it can't be. So how do we get out of this problem? So there's a few different mahalchim and achrayim. Not all of them are very easy to relate to. They suggest things that you're a shutev with the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, and a shutev is allowed to deduct any losses, so therefore it's like a loss. They, the Chavis Yorah that we brought in the Rambam Kaimis, he says, this is on page 10, really it's he's quoting Rav Oppenheim over here. He starts off saying, in the second paragraph, that's how it's the bottom paragraph on the first column, page 10, the first column, bottom paragraph. It's true what you're claiming that you do deduct the expenses before you calculate your profits. The kibajud, the rabbanon like gozer. It's in the rabbanon of Meiser. I'm saying it's his meaning that he's calling it a rabbanon. He's going with that. It's not spachta. The rabbanon. So they said you're allowed to deduct it. So what in the minute was only done that you can deduct expenses. That's a mahal. But there's a much simpler mahal. I think it's simpler. I don't could disagree. I think it's much simpler. When we're talking about tevua, and we say you have to take off meiser of the tevua that grew, it's very straightforward. Whatever was spent didn't grow. Whatever grew is what grew. And whatever grows, you have to take off meiser. So you've got 2 pounds, you got to take off 10% of it. Whatever grew, that's the tevua that we're taking off meiser from. Because we're taking off meiser of tevua. When it comes to meiser ksafim, what are we taking meiser off of? It's not meiser of your money. It's meiser of your profit. When you're talking profit, only things that aren't included in expenses is called profit. Anything I spent on is not, that's automatically not profit. Profit is this new thing of the thing that happens after expenses. So obviously the meiser of profits are only going to be after you deduct all the expenses that went into creating those profits. Right? So is that clear? I think that's pretty simple. So now we found an easy way out. We're talking about a new thing called profit. When the profit grows, you take off meiser. Profit is only after we deduct expenses. For example, if I take a loan and I invest the loan and I don't make my money back, I make back 80% of it. So you can tell me that 80% is profit. I started off in the red. So any expenses that you spend on making money, you're borrowing from yourself. That gets deducted before you start, before we can call it profit. So that takes care of that problem. So now we have this way of deducting expenses.
There's a custom that I didn't say what was grown.
I think it's the opposite. By tevuah, it's exeris hakasav. By tevuah, it's exeris hakasav that this thing that grew is now pedal. But over here, the minig is on profit. It's not a minig on money. Money doesn't have to be taken off meiser. There is no thing called money that we're saying is became chayav meiser. It's yiramachim. Things that grew. Until I deduct my expenses, it didn't grow yet. The only things that grew in my Meiser Rebach, and Isaac Sofim, is the profits after expenses.
That year by itself, I mean, you have a bad year, it's 3 years worth bad, and next year, when do you balance the books?
This is an excellent question. We're going to have to figure this out. At what point does the thing grow? With Tevua, we know the seed goes in and that disappears, and then whatever comes out of the ground, that's what grew. But when it comes to profits and losses, at what point do we say the year the profit was realized? At what point do we say no? We're still in the investment stage, and that's one way to. It's a good way to calculate losses. That's for sure. But for profits, do we say in a guy in a grocery store? Do we say that every time he sold candy, he just made a profit, or do we look month by month or year by year? So, the Shulz Yaakov deals with this, and we're gonna have to extend this somehow to the question of 1031s. And again, this is where I said it gets a little bit complex. We're going to have to rely on a certain amount of umdana and the fact that we're only required to do this for another to sort of balance this out. Shulz Yaakov, he allows for at least this much, that if I'm going to the market and it costs me this much to get to the market and I'm going to do a specific deal, and I put this money into the dish, and then I walk home at the end of the day from the market with the profit that I made. So he says all the expenses along the way, even if there were slight ups and downs along the way, you're haggling, going back and forth, all that is one. That he's okay with. But then he says, once I already put it into my ISA account, I can't then go take a loss, a later loss, and say, well, I'm going to pull that back out of the ISA I already gave. He says, you take him from credit, you make him cut. That doesn't make any sense. So one mahalak is to say, literally, you look at every deal for itself. And therefore, if you made a profit in one deal, that is income. You have to take off ISA from that. You lost everything on another deal. Too bad. That's your own loss. That's a totally different kind. The Neid Behuda and Rav Moshe following him, they say that we look
according to that mahalak, losses you can never utilize.
If it's within the same deal, right. Correct. If it's within the same deal, yes, but if not, not. Anytime it's two different deals, it's already a new thing. Rav Moshe and Neid Behuda, they look at blocks of time. Neid Behuda starts off by saying he doesn't like talking about Meister because there's no real sugya for it. As far as crazy as he calls it Bach Svaris. But then, of course, he finds Yerushalmi and other nice Marmokaitis. And he basically ties it into the Shana B'Shana. And he says, just like we find by Meister, you go look at year by year. So when it comes to Meister itself, also you have the right at least to go year by year. Ramesh is okay with this. So that you can take your books, balance your books at the end of the year. Chabad Chaim says very similar words in Avos Chesed. You balance your books at the end of the year, your profits, your losses, whatever you're left with. If you ended up in the black, take off 10% of it, that is your profit. You ended up in the red, you're putter. Whatever is above board, above water, that's where you take Meister off of. And that's usually what we're going to do. We're going to take blocks of time. Some people do it every 6 months.
You can carry a loss.
That's true. The Chabad Chaim says, if you were mekabel bli neder, and when you originally gave the Meister, you knew you were doing bli neder, then you can even carry it into the next year. That is true. Again, all that he's basing it on, the way you were mekabel.
Maybe you just shut up, shut up. Someone can explain within one deal or deal to deal. His issue, it could be not a riot.
It could be. It's sort of impossible to know. He's talking about his case. It's impossible to know what he would say if you split it. I don't know. But 1031 makes it all the more complicated. Did this deal end or didn't end? I mean, even I'm doing profits and losses, when's the deal over? So one thing is clear, you don't have to pull out the money. You can keep the money invested. You can give money from other places. You can balance your books. It's not like we're like Tavua and Tevel, you have to literally pull out. And this is, it's terrible until you took Meister from it. You can't take Meister somewhere else on this. So you can reinvest it, no problem. The question is just, at what point do we count this as a gain or a loss for this block of time? So my feeling personally is, discussed with a lot of others, but I don't know, there's no sugya of 1031. Seems the consensus is this, that if you're not a real, you're not someone that literally works in investing. It's not your business. You do deals. Deal after deal after deal. Now, you don't want to pay taxes on your deal, so you do a 1031 and flip it. That tax document is not going to change whether or not this is a new deal or not. This deal is done. It's wise not to pay taxes, so you found a way around dealing with the IRS, but this is a deal. This deal is over. It's money. It's profit, so you have every right to use the 1031 and reinvest it, but you can have to take other money and give Meister from it. On the other hand, if this is your business and you're constantly flipping, you buy, you flip, we can't say that every deal that closes is the end. I'm still at the marketplace. I'm still working. So therefore, if that's what you do, and you this is never realized profit, it's just a step in the next, it's just one step up. So there we could argue, if you didn't take it out for personal use, it's still invested. The Shemitah Levi does not like the fact that you can have a business running for years and years and years and appreciating, I never get nicer on it. It just doesn't make sense. I have a similar shame of David Feinstein. He says it just can't be. You have a guy who starts at $100,000. He builds it up to an empire. And well, it's in the business. I never took it out. So I never gave Meister. See, he doesn't say it's Osir. He just says that it's not right. So he says you should set times. Doesn't give an exact number. It makes sense annually. When you do your assessments, when you use your IRS thing, you set a time. That's the time that you use. And that's when you give your Meister based on where you're holding then. And again, anything that you can keep. It's not rolling for
it. You have to do it per transaction. One, you can't do it per time. I'm not evaluating the price of real estate.
Right, so I'm agreeing with you. So the point is, at a certain point, you're going to have to use, you don't have to cut a big deal. But if the deal did end and you flipped it into a new deal, You should calculate those profits as real profits, take my Israel from them, and now it's a new deal. Per transaction, correct. It doesn't necessarily have to be little for every transaction, but when at a certain cutoff date, whatever is liquid or potentially liquid or was liquid at a point at a time, that is now profit, and that you take my Israel.
It's a chumra the other way. You're leaving all your money in your business, and you're saying, well, it's for my business. Okay, now you're not sure what for. The fee would be the rice now to take care of all the need.
That's perfect.
No, but you it ends up being a bigger chumra. You know, I left my $10 million in the business. I didn't put it in my personal account. I'm walking from my side. Okay, but now you're an usher muflo. Mm-hmm. But now, every yoni, you're mechuyim, you didn't do rights according to the grow on the Chavetz Chaim. They have to be, you're masikyo, they have to pay everybody now.
Even Chavetz Chaim does, Chavetz Chaim wants to say it. He says, we do it like a beer growing around them. He doesn't say it loud enough.
He says it in a footnote.
In the footnote, but he doesn't say it loud enough. He says, you don't have
to hear like he's like, you don't walk with all the time. But if you're a walking hook, it's not a good beer
walking. Because you see what he writes on top. He says, this is the way it should be, but he doesn't say a lot on top. I don't know. That beer I'll run around.
The problem with the beer, too many beer and walk away, not giving. The Bangladesh are saying, what am I struggling so hard? That's really the problem is the beer aren't giving their money, they're supposed to be giving, not the Bangladesh giving money. There's hundreds of millions of dollars that people have in the bank, and middle class people are struggling.
What about unrealized gains? You keep hearing the Democrats saying all the millionaires and billionaires would never give any keep the money in the market going up and up and up. The people that are making billions of dollars never give a penny of tax or fortune.
Right, so it's pretty much, as far as I can tell, it's pretty much the same child. Seeing the chandelier, they don't like it. But what can we say? If I never took the profit out of the field, I did my 2-1, it's growing and it's growing and it's growing. Whether I take a mice or never, I never took it off. For mice, you took it off, and he needs to be right the shahr. It has to be nigra malacha. I didn't do that. I never took it off. What can I do? Your yarshim, we're going to have to give it. The minute the guy passes away and the guy gets a yerusha, even if it's unrealized gains, if he just inherited his business, 10% of our claimish that really,
should you always stop. I think yarshim paid fine. In other words, let's say you do give mice your whole life, and then there's a yerusha. It's still just my story.
Correct. Any new gain, any inheritance, whatever, the minute it's gotten, 10, really it should be 20%, but at least 10% has to go to stock.
Even if the
Moirish already took up there. As far as the Yoirish, as far as the guy who just got it, it's new money. You get new money, you have to give up my story.
Yeah.
The difference is that Hashem gives the money back to the rich people and takes it from them. So now we established, hopefully, that Meiser is this new thing similar to Tzvua, that when you have a profit, you take off 10% of it, not related to Tzedakah per se.
As a practical matter, you're saying the Meiser and stuff, but the Rosh Hashanah says, as a practical matter, I'll tell you Tzedakah. There's no such thing as being proactive, because if people knock on your door every single day, how can you say, well, I don't look for people? I can't answer my phone ever. I can't answer my door ever. The people knocking on my door, I mean, now working from home. 15 people a day, 20 people a day. I mean, it's like, there's no such thing as being proactive.
This is a big problem. That's why I came to tell you that there's two suyas, stuff and nice.
There's
two booklets here. This is just Chelik Beis, Stalker Meiser. We're focusing on Meiser. Those are talking about this problem, this Havas Chesed and the other, the Mishayim and Akhredim, or Kami and Im, what do you have to give up right now? That was in the first book, so you're not going to invite me back. Correct, because as far as you're concerned, it is liquid. It's a new profit you just got. So the fact that you want to take it now and leave it in a business so that you can invest it, that's a new deal. So you don't necessarily have to liquidate the business, but you owe that much money immediately. Correct. Absolutely. If it's a living home, it's a place where they're living, so that's already a different child. On personal items, the meaning is usually not to give Meiser. So it's hard to know if this is a place that the child was living all along. He didn't get anything new. He's just continuing to live there. So I don't have a clear source, but I don't think the meaning is to give Meiser.
What about gifts? Like somebody at wedding present. I asked the shower once about this, and he said, whatever we spend on that specific item, you have to give Meiser.
So there is a Rosh Chodesh Zalman that says, and like we said, there's going to be a range of shittas on just about everything in Hilchos Ma'aser. But Chaznish, quoted by Chaim Kanievsky in Derech Emunah, says the minhag is not to give on gifts that are not money. A money gift, we do give on, or if it's
bar
cash.
Money, you have
to give. Bar mitzvah money, correct? Yes, you do if your parents let. If parents don't let, that's a whole different discussion. If you came before your bar mitzvah, after bar mitzvah, seven hosh lechana, chayshu mishpah, seven reish, ayin, ayin, chum, and it's big over there. So it's... But you can mess it twice. Not only that, if you have your own money and you lose it, then you find it. If you gave up on it in the middle, Chaim Kanievsky said you have to give meiser. He even says it so far, you lend somebody money and you don't think he's going to pay you back. If the guy ends up paying you back, you have to give meiser on it. Found new money.
Can you explain this?
Sorry? So it depends what you did with it. The Chofetz Chaim deals with this little novice method. If you're locking it up in a current kayemis. So if you never plan to take the money out, it's going to be a fund and it's always going to be lending out and you don't really own it anymore. Even entirely own it. I mean, as far as stuff, it's given away. So then you gave all that money to Meister. It may not be Tani, and that's the discussion of what we do exactly with money. Meister does have to go to Aniyim. Minig is not to give everything to Aniyim. Minig is to sort of split it.
This question was you sell a bunch of buildings for $100 million. You're good when you take your Meister. Now you put it in a 501c3 that you control. You don't distribute it to the Aniyim. It's sitting there. You give a little here, you give a little there, but the Aniyim are dead to Kaldalos. That's his question. Is that considered stock? If I put it in a C3, not-for-profit account, the IRS has gave charity, it's in a Fidelity account, but you didn't give it to the NDA, it's just sitting
in one year?
No, I wanted to know if you could to allocate, you don't have to distribute it, like Ramesh has a true, you want to give it to your brother who's learning in college for 3 years, you can split it up. But that's not what happens. I know that here, they sell their business, they get $1 billion, they take 50 million, they put it in their 501c3, and then you got to break your head to get 50 bucks out of these guys. So that's not enough. They just put it there, park it there, control it. You do it to distribute it. Right? Am I wrong? Yeah, don't check the distribution.
I think we need a chat.
I need to meet some of your friends. Why? I agree with you. Why? You're not for giving up, but my friends are giving up.
I agree with you. They shouldn't be locking up money. That's your, but that goes back to the person.
Much they have, I'm afraid to give it all out right away.
That goes back to stuff. I have stuck the money. When do I have to disperse something? All I'm doing now is doing out fresh. That's what I say. Nice that I'm doing out fresh. I'm setting it aside. This is money stuck. Now I have money stuck. What do you do with money stuck? You give it to the first time he knocks on your door. You save for your craven. You give it to your kids' meistis. That's how you disperse stuck in funds. Meister, again, then what you did with it, assuming that you put it as stock of money, it's stock of money. How are you, what did you do with your Meister money? It's kind of, you might be using it either for a melee title or for other mitzvahs if you're allowed.
Are you saying that you're not going to distribute it all out right away? The year that you made, however Rishana works, when you set it aside, that's already a kima of Afrasha, and that's enough. You don't need to.
Essentially, but obviously, if it's never going to go out, then it's not Afrasha. That's just a joke, right? So it has to be that's going to get out. It's not necessarily like Tzavka that there's a chiyuv. The minute you see an onion, you have to give it out. It's not that kind of chiyuv. But if you earmarked it for onion, then it becomes Tzavka money. Earmarked it for your kid's building fund, then why didn't you give it out? What, like, why are you holding on to it?
So the calendar year that you have had for that Afrasha, not
correct. So Chofetz Chaim does say, as soon as you're mafresh it, you should look to give it away right away. Why are you sitting on stock money? You should look to give it away right away. So I'm not sure why these people are locking it up. If they're trying to make a profit off it, they're making a profit off nicer money.
Well, just when you have a few million that you're controlling, you'll figure out why.
Apparently, I've got there.
What's the chiluk between you said that if you get a matan, you don't have to give it, but not cash, but get a yerusha, that's cash you have to.
So again, I'm using this. It's we don't really, there's no source to it. It's a Chaim Kanievsky quoting the Chaznish. The minig is not to give meiser on matanis that are not cash. The logic that I'm suggesting is because we don't view it as profit, whereas an inheritance is clearly profit. Even if it's not liquid, it's profit. Like someone comes to you for Shabbos, they buy your chocolate platter, you don't start counting out 10 chocolates to give it to Aniyah. I didn't get a profit. We don't see it as a profit.
I have a credit card. I go to use it for all the help.
I don't know what to do about this. Credit card points or even gift cards. Someone buys you a gift card. Did I get cash or I didn't get cash? I don't really know. But it's we're trying to figure out. I would think it depends how fungible it is. Now that we have a whole market of gift cards, so they essentially gave you cash. It's just a question of how much cash. I think it's sort of subjective to the market. What do they give me? They give you something to use. They give me a chair to sit on, so I don't get my own. They gave me money. I can spend it on something. So they gave me money. Even the Chaznish says if someone gave you money to go buy something, then you do have to give my own. He says, once you give Meiser, then you're not going to have enough money to buy the item. So fine, so you give Meiser from somewhere else. You'll chip in your own 10%. On the other hand, even he agrees that they just sent you to go buy the thing, but they didn't actually give you the money. They just made you a shliach to go to the store and buy it. Then they didn't give you money. Then they just gave you the item. You're just a shliach to go do it. So it sort of depends on whether or not you're allowed to use it for other things, or if they gave a clear directive and said, don't do anything else, just go to the store, give it to them, and just do me a favor and do it for me. Are they making you a shliach to do it, or do they actually give it to you for use?
So what did they actually do?
So that clearly is like a shlichus. That's just a shlichus. If you take them, there's all sugya of matana, not the base of the sugya in the dorm. If someone gives you a matana and it's specifically earmarked in a certain way that you can't do what you want with it, so it's not really a matana. And the Alpilokas matana, there's big sugyas about this. When exactly? But there's a big sugya of at what point does something become matana? For example, I had a big problem when your wife's wedding ring, is she allowed to use it for other things? Probably not. What are the engagement rings? A wedding ring, I'm using it for Kedusha, we can say, we'll work it out, the Messiah Kedusha works out. What about her engagement ring? Can she sell that without your permission? I don't think so. So in that case, it's not really a matana. I'll be then, it should be yours. If Chas Hashem, there's a divorce, who owns that ring is always a big fight. But it's if it was matana b'nei schayrin, l'chayra, she wasn't allowed to sell it, even though you didn't tell her, it's not you don't sell it, but it was very implicit that this thing is for her to use and she can't sell it. So even if 20 years down the line, Pasha, she doesn't own it. Again, that's
she's
a
serious. She has a big Shabbat when she gets it, it's not hers.
It's bottled to the husband.
I don't know. Again, I'm not saying that. I don't think it's true. Somehow I do think it's a matana, but I'm not sure how we get around that issue. If it's stuck, it's clearly about the acher. If I earmarked it for a specific mitzvah, it's also about the acher. No, I understand. But if I took my ma'aser money and said, I'm giving this to tzedakah aniyim, then it definitely is about the acher. That we have a pasuk. The dasher of pasuk is about the for aniyim.
When is the baltachah?
As soon as you set it aside for aniyim. As soon as you could even be machshava potentially is machlek susheni. If you set it aside for aniyim, if you set it aside for other misses, it's not so posh that
the
baltachah.
These people with the 501c3 with $50 million, they keep like baltachah every day.
If they originally, this is also Abbas talks about this stuff. You asked the Bucky, but it's if originally I said I'm going to be giving it annually or at a certain pay rate, then that's all, that was my whole method. All that it was to do that. So then it's not going to be more than that. Yeah.
I need to give $50,000 that I fucking sacred Torah and then I lend it out to school. I get my Meister from school using that Torah or that school using my set of farm or something like that.
So this is, again, this is sort of a different discussion, which I wanted to get into, but we got a little sidetracked there, of whether or not you're allowed to use your Meiser money for everything, anything other than Aniyim. The Ramah told us that your Meiser money is supposed to go to Aniyim Om, not for other things. The Taz, surprisingly, on that Ramah, says that you're allowed to use it to buy Sandikoyas, he says. You pay for a bris and you get Sandikoyas, you're allowed to use it, you're allowed to buy Aliyas and Shul with it. So that's the Taz, just as an aside, the Piskachuva and Rikideger both point out, if you're bidding against someone in Shul, and you happen to be the highest bidder, you're only allowed to take out of Meiser the difference in your bid and his bid. Because by you bidding, you just knocked him out, and now he's not getting it. So you just mafsed that much money. So the only Meiser money is on the difference between the two bids. Wow. Then you can take out of Meiser. So that you can make some sort of communion before and figure it all out. For all bidding Meiser money, then yeah, because he's going to be giving it anyway, you didn't take away from Meiser. But assuming, very often, It's on the page. It's hard to say it's not the consensus. It's on the page of this halacha. But I never took a poll. I don't know what the minig is, and we'll say that whatever kabbal meiser. But it does seem clear that if you took money away from tzedaka in order to give a little bit more, then you can't take that out of meiser. I understand how they set it up, but had you not made your bid, they would have gotten 500. Now that you made your bid, they're getting 600, but they just lost that fight. So you took money out of stuff, right? You took other money, put it in, and now you want to take it out of ISIS?
The show was Michael. The understood the thing that it is that Israel was having the option. It's Michael when they lost to the highest bidder. That would be the umbin. I'm sorry, the show was Michael. Otherwise, people wouldn't bid.
So Mishabeh money is pure money. So that totally could go from my so it's not bidding against anybody, no one's losing anything. So that's where we have this past telling us that you're allowed to use the Tevis HaNoh. You're allowed to give Meiser and your Meiser, and even though you get kickback, so to speak, if it's not an established kickback, you just Tevis HaNoh, it's just benefits you're getting out of it. That is Mutter. Same idea. If you're allowed to sponsor the Kiddush, if it's again, I didn't get into all the details yet. You're supposed to really, Meiser is really supposed to go primarily to Aniyim Loim De Toyer. It's supposed to be similar to Meiser Rishon, which goes to the Levim. Supposed to be supporting people, sitting and learning. That is really the primary focus, the primary goal of Meiser Ksafim.
What about Meiser?
Now, just a second. That's a Meiser Ksafim supposed to be, not Stalker. Stalker goes to Mishpacha and Alagim Zafim. Meiser Ksafim is intended to be earmarked for people similar to the Levim of old. That's clearly in Midrashim and other places. Meant for the Aniyim Amele Tayyar. People are sitting and learning, and you're supporting them learning. That's really chiefly what it's intended to be for. So now we broaden that because we're in the world of Blina, they're in the world of, I was only in Kabul under these circumstances. So we broaden that to give to other mitzvahs also. So half, at least half of it, Chavos Chaim says, it really should be earmarked for Aniyim Lemde Tayyar. They don't literally have to be Aniyim. The Levim weren't necessarily literally poor. But basically, you are giving funds that are enabling people to be the Kohen Hashem, the Levi Hashem. That's really the that wasn't hard to say. that's clearly from the Chofetz Chaim and others. So at least half of it should be going there. The other half of the minik pretty much is to use it for mitzvahs. It'll be better for giving chaimish. Here, the Chofetz Chaim is happy with to give meiser for aniyim and taira, and the other meiser, the second meiser, you give to give to shar mitzvahs. So that's. So again, so if they don't have a Sefer Torah, I'm pretty much done. If they don't have a Sefer Torah, you're enabling them to have a Sefer Torah, then clearly that the Tazmeri brings down, you're allowed to buy Sfarim, because Shula doesn't have Sfarim, so you can buy it and you can lend it out, that's fine, but he says you have to make sure it's known that this is donated, not that it's yours, not that you're actually going to take it home with them. If you're using Meiser money, you got to give it. You can't keep it for yourself and just let them use it. So, or you can keep it for yourself and let them use it and have rent it out to the shul, and that's fine. But then you'll deduct the rent, so to speak, you know, that usage space out of Meiser. You can't take the whole thing out of Meiser and then keep something for yourself. That's clearly not a donation. So, if they need the Sefer Torah, they don't need the Sefer Torah, and you just want to make a full Sefer Torah, not a great usage of Meiser money. It's not a big still spending neshama either. It's just another unkind sitting in the yard. You're better off buying a live Sefer Torah that's going to actually utilize it. Okay, so let's continue a little bit. I didn't even get to half what I wanted to say.
Nobody's going to rush to leave. We're all listening to people. We give advice. This is Hilchos Balabah. This is critical stuff. Just take your time and tell it.
He's my guy.
You already gave it to me. Good much.
Okay, so we have a big problem now. We established that Meiser is tzvuah, it's profit, so I'm going to take off from my income. So the question is, if a guy can't afford it, is he potter from Meiser? Bishlama, if it's stuck up, so it's like chayach akoyim. If I have a flat tire and you have a flat tire, I don't leave my flat tire and go fix yours. I'm entitled to fix mine first. So if it's stuck up, so if I can't afford it, I don't have to go support others. There's a minimum stuck up, shlishis hashekel. Again, details are in book one. But as far as Meiser, if it's like Tavua, so whatever grows, whatever profit, you got to take up 10%. So even if a guy can't afford it, clearly you should be machuiv to give him a meiser, whatever profit he has, whatever he's left with. But whatever profit came in, profit is profit, you should have to give 10%. So that's not very comfortable for a lot of people. So what should we do now? Is there a chiyuv of somebody cannot afford to give meiser? Is he machuiv to shave off 10% and give it away to aniyim? So here, so the Kabbalah says in order to staka, and if you can't afford it, you don't have to give staka. That's what it means. It ain't like a day parnos also. You don't have to support yourself. Whatever your living standard is and should be, you're entitled to keep yourself as far as stuff is considered. What about the meiser? So here we have Ramesh Feinstein saves us. This is in a divris. It's not a nergis meiser. It's in divris. It's a gittin. It's a totally different topic, but it's in the brackets over there, and it's a beautiful piece. There's a anen halacha. It's in Mishnah Zayin. If a guy doesn't have enough money to give tzedakah, so he says that you're chayev lahaktim parnasa da'atzma. Your parnasa comes first. So Ramesh makes a diak in the Ramah over there that it's not pshat that somebody who does not have money to give is potter from stalker. No, he's chayev in stalker. And he's, again, the reference there is Meiser Ksafer. It's not pshat that you are potter. And you have to take your money and you have to be mafish 10%. Normos, there's a din of kedima. Even Meiser Ksafer, there is a din of kedima. So who's the first ani you meet? First ani you meet should be yourself. So which means that even if you cannot afford Meiser, he says Sorachim Ladina, but he's noted that this is Takchav Neramah. Even if you cannot afford Meiser, any income that comes in, you're mafresh. This 10% is La'aniyin. Now, who's the first ani? As long as I'm not supported, as long as my children are not supported, they come first. So really, you take out from your Meiser account and you spend it on yourself. You have no choice. That's the right thing to do.
You actually have to do like an action of afrashim.
As far as the minig, yes. As far as this minig is concerned, you do a Meiser afrashim. You balance your books. You say, this much is for Meiser. Yeah, you really should have a separate account. You put it to the Meiser account. And then when you see you're running short that month, you take it out for yourself. And this is not just an advisable halacha. It's mamish practical. It's mamish practical. Because some people, many people, they feel they're in a lower income tax bracket. And therefore, they're bother from Meiser. Like we're saying, it's same way. You pronounce that it comes first. So they just skip Meiser altogether. It's not a good eitzah. And it's definitely not the Jewish way. The Jewish way always was that everybody gave Meiser. So Melo, you never stop. Always give Meiser. Always be mafresh any income that you get. Be mafresh, have a cheshbon, whatever comes in, you give meiser. Now, don't give it away. If you need it for yourself, you take it for yourself. The minute you don't need it for yourself, you give it away to other people. It's not your money. It's meiser money. But you're the first ani. If you do this in a practical sense, you'll see you'll end up giving a lot more tzedakah, and you'll also have a lot more for yourself. Because of chanun yom bezeis. I'm giving meiser. I'm doing meiser. I'm doing mine. I'm giving meiser. And then he told me to support myself first. I'm supporting myself. People don't do this and just assume that they bought from Meiser. For years and years, they'll go and their income improves sometimes and they're doing great and they still don't give Meiser. Oh, I bought from Meiser. Not a good idea. Always have a separate Meiser account. There's a psychological aspect to this too. As long as you're taking things out of your own account, it's painful. Let's take money out of your wallet and give it to people, it's painful. If it's a separate account, just putting the other account doesn't hurt you. It's still my account. It's putting the account. Once it's in that account, you want to just get rid of it. It's just out. So just you'll be looking for people to disperse it to. So on a psychological level, it's a good idea. On a practical level, it's a very good idea. Have a separate account. Anytime you have a revach, put 10% in there and balance your books every half a year or every year. You can deduct all your expenses. And again, do that before you actually makrish the meiser. It's good to have a separate account. Before you actually cheshbon, this is meiser and this isn't. You deduct the expenses that went into making this money that includes all the business travel, minus the things they had to spend anyway, but all the business expenses, the babysitting they had to pay in order to make the money. It's not so common. Most people are paying babysitters anyway. But if you're paying babysitting specifically so that you could make money and you wouldn't be paying it otherwise, all those expenses, you take that off the top. But if there's any profit, 10% goes into the Meiser account. And you balance the books, make sure you didn't get cut short somewhere along the way. And that is your Meiser, you disperse it as quickly as possible. And that way you'll be able to you're supposed to do, and then you'll be saying to the brachas of the Meiser, to the brachas of the Rebbeinu Shlomo. This is a very good idea. And for more information, this booklet is a very good booklet, but there's a lot more booklets. So if you look in the back, is all the things that Yerucha has done in the past year and a half. And we're also now we're in the middle of Ribbis. Ribbis is very, very common, very, very practical, and very, very complex. It comes in all over the place. So we're starting Hatchaviscus is next week, and then there's going to be another month of Ribbis and Commerce. Anyone who's involved in any kind of financing is for sure dealing with Ribbis, but really any type of purchasing, commodity trading, everything. 210 net 30 is a very, very common thing, Shiloh. Any early bird, so I got an email last week, someone did a parenting class. Early bird is a major therapist class. The early bird special is you pay up front, you get half price. I emailed him and said, it looks great, but it's Ribbis. He's telling you, what, really? We had to restructure the whole early bird special. It's a promise Ribbis. The prepay is Ribbis. There's many, many more things that come up, like using other people's credit lines, any capital call arrangement, and if you're involved in a partnership and there's a capital call clause in there, and if the guy doesn't pay, then there's Ribbis. All these types of things are very, very serious Ribbis shaylas. Borrowing Bitcoin, very common Ribbis shayla. If you borrow somebody's Bitcoin, you can pay it back later. Is that self-assault? What is Bitcoin? Is it money? Paris? These are very complicated things. So I encourage them strongly to get involved. This program is designed to be learned in an hour a week, or tops 2 hours a week. And you can get, you say this, and throughout Chesh Mishpat and all things you need to know in business. But again, I thank you for inviting me. If there are any more questions, still have a couple minutes. Yes.
So expenses are defined by the person's standard of living. Like if a guy generally applies business class, is that considered an expense or that's an applied economy, so the business class cannot be written off.
I don't know the clear answer to that. You definitely shouldn't be spending more out of your mice than you would spend on yourself. That doesn't seem to make sense.
No, I'm saying if you recognize, you said that you only recognize profits half your expenses,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you have to fly somewhere for a business meeting, that's mm-hmm. an expense. You can fly economy, you can fly private, you can fly business class. So is that flight considered an expense? Or
says, minus whatever you would have spent had you been home. I would think it is, right? So I would think yes. Again, this is not, well, just be careful. One second.
What if you would pay for business class for your employees? And when you fly business class, it's a legitimate business.
Right. So let me just clarify something that's very important. Leitzoyes don't come out of your Meiser account. Leitzoyes come off before you take off Meiser. So you're not taking the 100% of your tax out of Meiser account.
Is that recognized as profit or not? That's what I'm asking. If it costs you $2,000
and you're staying home, you wouldn't have spent it, so then I think it is going to.
What is tax?
So income tax, Ramesh is Mechalik. He says business taxes are expenses, your personal taxes are not expenses. So that's pretty much, it's not always 100% clear, but anything, taxes you're paying because of the business, that's going to be a business expense, including the real estate tax on the business property. Taxes you're paying because of the business, or personal taxes, head taxes, sales taxes, things like that on your personal items are not deductible.
Income tax.
So your regular classic income tax is considered an expense. You have to spend this much money in order to make that much money. So Ramesh says that clearly that comes off before. So if someone asks you the basic question, is Meiser on net or gross? It's definitely on net. But yeah, just be careful. You're not deducting any taxes that are really your own personal taxes that for outside the business.
What about deductions on payroll deductions?
Sorry, what?
If a person sells a business and actually capital gains tax, so you're saying it's profit net of the tax.
Correct. So again, with capital gains, like things like stocks, sometimes people have to take off Meiser before. So you don't have to double Meiser on it. You were taking off in the meantime, like we said before, if it was like appreciating and you're taking off Meiser in the meantime, then you don't have to again take off Meiser at the end when you sell it.
No, I'm saying a real estate transaction, you pay capital gains tax, the tax that you pay is usually a capture of deductions.
So the easiest way to do it is we look at money that's taken out of the business. That's the easiest way to do it. So if you're buying the thing for yourself, then you can't say that this is all business expense. You're gaining ownership as you go, so that any ownership that you gain, he says, is a profit. But we have the same problem. As long as it's part of a business, it's part of the business, I can take it out. So I don't know. I don't know exactly at what split. We say, this is mine, and I took it out. But we say, no, this is just the business that's appreciating. Your own house appreciates. Clearly, people don't get Meiser on it. Even when they sell it, since it's their own residence, they don't usually get Meiser on appreciation. Also, we deduct inflation. That Rebbeisha says you can deduct any inflation, you can balance it. And if you look at the actual gain, not you have to take off the difference in inflation from when you bought it to when you sold it.
What about like payroll deductions? Like, for example, someone two deductions on a specific 401k deduction. When people get paid, sometimes you have a 401k that you put money in a 401k that you're not allowed to touch until you're 65 years old. Also, another one is like a medical insurance deduction. How do you cash in that out in terms of deducting expenses?
All right, so medical insurance is harder. If it's just 401k, I'll take it out later. So essentially, we could say I'm going to take off my money when I take it out.
So that's a lot.
You know, I don't think anyone can tell you that you're included to take it off. Again, it's like you left it to go in the field. You never brought it home. It's still in there. It's locked up. I can't use it. So technically, if I would sell it, you know, if you buy one of those people, will buy it off of you. They'll buy your policy or whatever. So then at that point, you just realize whatever that is.
Also, as long as the employer's matching it,
I didn't get
it. The employer's also giving you money to match your 401k. Also, you can sell them. I'll mention that later.
He's not giving it to you. He's giving it to himself, right?
Well, he's giving it to your account. No, it's to you. It's to your account.
You take it out or he takes it out?
Both. It's a match. I give 1% and the employer gives 1%. I put 2% in my personal 401k account.
You can't take it until it's realized. Until you pull it out, it's locked out. It's growing. It's still growing. When it grows, you'll take it out. But as far as insurance things, so we put in the booklet, there's some dominance that let's say your employer is paying your insurance. So you're saving $15,000, $20,000 a year, essentially as part of your thing. So he says you have to look at the cash value and give myself of that to stock. I don't think that's the minimum. I don't think people do it.
Well, what about the part you're paying? I'm paying my payroll deductions. So I'm paying $300. Now, does that come out from the amount of revenue that I have? Or do I say no? Medical insurance.
If you're the employer and you're getting insurance out of it, so then you took the money and you put it somewhere. So I would think that's called real
life. That's on the employee.
As far as the employee, that's what Shlomo Zalman is saying. You just got money.
Not what he's contributing. It's what I'm paying. Meaning, say I make $50,000 a year, but I pay $10,000 in insurance expense. Can I deduct those $10,000 from how much from how much I have to pay in my fish mice?
Again, the numbers the reality they always use is if I realized it, then I take it and take my share. No, I don't know at what point you start realizing. I'm paying you that's true. No, so that he said you assess it. You assess what it's about. What did he give you? Someone gives you a shot. So he didn't give you that much money. What? If you're, let's say you're paid completely in non-tangible, in non-money. You're paid in Bitcoin. You're paid in, so you can tell, I never got money. I only got things. If that's your paycheck, then you got things. We don't look at the difference between money and items. Only if it's a gift. So then you didn't give me money. You just gave me a chair to sit on. Your employer is not giving you a chair to sit on. He's giving you a paycheck. So whatever value it has to you, that's going to be your maestro. Vice,
if there's any other questions,
you want to sit down. Any questions? Thank you everyone for coming.
Wish.
You have to buy me back. There's a whole, again, it's in the booklet. You look. But the idea is that anything you have to pay, you cannot take off my sir. Anything that's a chayv is not my sir. It doesn't come out of my sir. It's something you have to pay regardless. Even if it's a mitzvah, it's something you have to pay regardless. It does not come out of my sir. So tuition is a big sugya of what tuition you include to pay in theory. Rebbeisha puts the whole thing aside and says that as long as you have to send your kids to school, and if you don't, again, now there's no truancy courts, but essentially there's still an obligation to educate your kids within a system. And if you're not educating them in the Talmud Torah, that means you're going to be sending them to public school, which is obviously not an option. So mainly you're mechuyev to pay whatever it costs to send them to yeshiva. So now if you can bargain them down, you can give more from ISA. You go with the lowest amount that they'll be willing to take your kid. And that's that much you cannot take out of ISA. Anything above that, you could take out of ISA. The building fund also depends how they phrase it. If something you have to pay, or else they're not taking your kid, or they're sending your kid home. So essentially, they're billing you for it. If they're billing you for it, they're sending you invoices, then you have to pay. So then how can you take it out of my sir?
That's where the building fund. There's a line in the which.
That's their way of itemizing you to get more money out of your shop.
We have
the point remains the same. You have to pay it. If you have to pay it, then you're back to the same thing as no show claim. If you had a way out of it, like you could. I don't know. That's some way out of you can deal and not have to pay. It's then they kill out of my system.
We had a shop from the Dublin.
What? This is a loaded question. If I'm paying for my neighbor's kids, can I pay that
out? We asked that for a dollar. You said you could deduct that payment from my circuit. We, I'm president of the largest school, and we sell for our parents who ask, and we'll try to get my circuit. We tell our parents who ask, of your $15,000 per kid, X amount goes to support other children.
Okay, so that's what I heard as well. The only thing is, I asked a bunch of schools locally by us, they said there's no such thing, they never do it. They never raise tuition higher than the cost of the kid.
Huh?